Again he was shut up with the Davenports in their cabinet and admits that he could make nothing of it, but, of course, it must be a conjuring trick. Then when he finds that mediums who perceive that his mental attitude is helpless refuse to sit with him again, he sets that down also as an evidence of their guilt. There is a certain type of scientific mind which is quite astute within its own subject and, outside it, is the most foolish and illogical thing upon earth. It was the misfortune of the Seabird Commission, which we will now discuss, that it was entirely composed of such people, with the exception of one spiritualist, a Mr. Hazard, who was co-opted by them and who had little chance of influencing their general atmosphere of obstruction. The circumstances in which the commission was appointed were these. A certain Henry Seabird, a citizen of Philadelphia, had left the sum of $60,000 for the purpose of founding a chair of philosophy at the University of Pennsylvania with the condition that the said university should appoint a commission to make a thorough and impartial investigation of all systems of morals, religion, or philosophy which assumed to represent the truth, and particularly of modern spiritualism. The personnel of the body chosen is immaterial save that all were connected with the university, with Dr. Pepper, the provost of the university as nominal chairman, Dr. Furness as acting chairman, and Professor Fullerton as secretary. In spite of the fact that the duty of the commission was to make a thorough and impartial investigation of modern spiritualism, the preliminary report coolly states, "The commission is composed of men whose days are already filled with duties which cannot be laid aside, and who are able, therefore, to devote but a small portion of their time to these investigations." The fact that the members were satisfied to start with this handicap shows how little they understood the nature of the work before them. Their failure, in the circumstances, was inevitable. The proceedings began in March, 1884, unless the preliminary report, so-called, was issued in 1887. This report was, as it proved, the final one. For though it was reissued in 1920, there was no addition save a colorless of three paragraphs by a descendant of the former chairman. The gist of this report is that fraud on the one side and credulity on the other make up the whole of spiritualism, and that there was really nothing serious on which the committee could report. The whole long document is well worth reading by any student of psychic matters. The impression left upon the mind is that the various members of the commission were in their own limited way honestly endeavoring to get at the facts, but that their minds, like that of Dr. Edmonds, were so formed that when, in spite of their repellent and impossible attitude, some psychic happening did manage to break through their barriers, they would not for an instant consider the possibility that it was genuine, but simply passed it by as if it did not exist. Thus with Mrs. Fox, came they. Did get well, mark traps, and are content with the thousand times disproved supposition that they came from inside her own body, and they pass without comment the fact that they received from her long messages, written swiftly in script, which could only be read when held to the looking glass, as it was from right to left. This swiftly written script contained an abstruse Latin sentence which would appear to be much above the capacity of the medium. All of this was unexplained and ignored. Again, in reporting upon Mrs. Lord, the commission got the direct voice, and also phosphorescent lights after the medium had been searched. We are informed that the medium kept up an almost continuous clapping of hands, and yet people at a distance from her seem to have been touched. The spirit in which the inquiry is approached may be judged from the remark of the acting chairman to W. M. Keeler, who was said to be a spirit photographer, that he would not be satisfied with less than a cherub on my head, one on each shoulder, and a full-blown angel on my breast. A spiritualist would be surprised indeed if an inquirer in so frivolous a mood should be favored with results. All through runs the fallacy that the medium is producing something as a conjurer does. Never for a moment do they seem to realize that the favor and assent of invisible operators may be essential operators who may stoop to the humble-minded and shrink away from, or even make game of, the self-sufficient scoffer. While there were some results which may have been genuine, but which are brushed aside by the report, there were some episodes which must be painful to the spiritualist, but which nonetheless must be faced. The Commission exposed obvious fraud in the case of the Slate medium, Mrs. Patterson, and it is impossible to deny that the case against Slade is a substantial one. The latter days of this medium were admittedly under a cloud, and the powers which had once been so conspicuous may have been replaced by trickery. Dr. Furness goes the length of asserting that such trickery was actually admitted, but the anecdote as given in the report rather suggests chaff upon the part of the medium. That Dr. Slade should jovially beckon the doctor in from his open window, and should at once in reply to a facetious remark admit that his own whole life had been a swindle, is more than one can easily believe. There are some aspects in which the Commission or some members of it seem to have been disingenuous. Thus, they state at the beginning that they will rest their report upon their own labors and disregard the mass of material already available. In spite of this, they introduce a long and adverse report from their secretary upon the Zollner evidence in favor of Slade. This report is quite incorrect in itself, as is shown in the account of Zollner given in the chapter treating of Slade's experiences in Leipzig. It carefully suppresses the fact that the chief conjurer in Germany, after a considerable investigation, gave a certificate that Slade's phenomena were not trickery. On the other hand, when the testimony of a conjurer is against a spiritual explanation, as in the comments of Keller, it is given in full, with no knowledge, apparently, that in the case of another medium, Eglinton, this same Keller had declared the results to be beyond his art. At the opening of the report the Commission says, "We deemed ourselves fortunate at the outset in having as a counsellor the late Mr. Thomas R. Hazard, a personal friend of Mr. Siebert, and widely known throughout the land as an uncompromising spiritualist. Mr. Hazard evidently knew the importance of ensuring the right conditions and the right type of sitters for such an experimental investigation. Describing an interview he had with Mr. Siebert a few days before the latter's death, when he agreed to act as his representative, Mr. Hazard says he did so only with the full and distinct understanding that I should be permitted to prescribe the methods to be pursued in the investigation, designate the mediums to be consulted, and reject the attendance of any person or persons whose presence I deemed might conflict with the harmony and good order of the spirit circles. But this representative of Mr. Siebert seems to have been quietly ignored by the university." After the Commission had been sitting for some time, Mr. Hazard was dissatisfied with some of its members and their methods. We find him writing as follows in the Philadelphia North American, presumably after vainly approaching the university authorities, without aiming to detract in the slightest degree from the unblemished moral character that attaches to each and every individual of the faculty, including the Commission, in public esteem, nor to the high social and literary standing they occupy in society. I must say that through some strange infatuation, obliquity of judgment, or perversity of intellect, the trustees of the university have placed on the Commission for the Investigation of Modern Spiritualism, a majority of its members whose education, habit of thought, and prejudices so singularly disqualify them from making a thorough and impartial investigation of the subject which the trustees of the university are obligated both by contract and in honor to do, that had the object in view been to belittle and bring into discredit, hatred and general contempt the cause that I know the late Henry Siebert held nearest his heart and loved more than all else in the world beside, the trustees could scarcely have selected more suitable instruments for the object intended from all the denizens of Philadelphia than are the gentlemen who constitute the majority of the Siebert Commission. And this I repeat, not from any causes that affect their moral, social or literary standing in society, but simply because of their prejudices against the cause of spiritualism." He further advised the trustees to remove from the Commission Messrs. Fullerton, Thompson, and Koenig. Mr. Hazard quoted Professor Fullerton as saying in a lecture before the Harvard University Club on March 3, 1885, "It is possible that the way mediums tell a person's history is by the process of thought, transference, for every person who is thus told of these things goes to a medium thinking of the same points about which the medium talks. When a man hears a cold he hears a buzzing noise in his ears, and an insane person constantly hears sounds which never occur. Perhaps, then, disease of mind aurea, or some strong emotion, may be the cause of a large number of spiritual phenomena. These words were spoken after the professor had served on the commission for more than 12 months. Mr. Hazard also quotes Dr. George A. Koenig's views, published in the Philadelphia Press, about a year after his appointment on the commission. "I must frankly admit that I am prepared to deny the truth of spiritualism as it is now popularly understood. It is my belief that all of the so-called mediums are humbugs without exception. I have never seen Slade perform any of his tricks, but, from the published descriptions, I have set him down as an impostor, the cleverest one of the lot. I do not think the commission view with much favor the examination of so-called spirit mediums. The wisest men are apartment to be deceived. One man in an hour can invent more tricks than a wise man can solve in a year." Mr. Hazard learned from what he considered to be a reliable source, that Professor Robert T. Thompson was responsible for this view, which appeared in Penn's Monthly of February, 1880. "Even if spiritualism be all that its champions claim for it, it has no importance for anyone who holds a Christian faith. The consideration and discussion of the subject is tampering with notions and condescending to discussions with which no Christian believer has any business. We have in these expressions of opinion a means of judging how unsuited these members of the commission were for making what Mr. Siebert asked for, a thorough and impartial investigation of the subject." An American spiritualist periodical, the Banner of Light, commenting on Mr. Hazard's communication, wrote, "So far as we have information, no notice was taken of Mr. Hazard's appeal. Certainly no action was had, for the members above quoted remain on the commission to this day, and their names are appended to this preliminary report. Professor Fullerton, in fact, was and now is the secretary, 120 of the 150 pages of the volume before us are written by him, and exhibit that excessive lack of spiritual perception and knowledge of occult, and we might also say natural laws, which led him to inform an audience of Harvard students that when a man has a cold he hears a buzzing noise in his ears, that an insane person constantly hears sounds which never occur, and suggest to them that spiritual phenomena may proceed from such causes." The Banner of Light continues, "We consider that the Siebert Commission's failure to follow the counsel of Mr. Hazard, as it was plainly their duty to do, is the key to the entire failure of all their subsequent efforts. The paucity of phenomenal results, in any degree approaching what might be looked for, even by a skeptic, which this book records, is certainly remarkable. It is a report of what was not done, rather than that of what was. In the memoranda of proceedings at each session, as given by Professor Fullerton, there is plainly seen a studied effort to give prominence to everything that a superficial mind might deem proof of trickery on the part of the medium, and to conceal all that might be evidence of the truth of his claims. It is mentioned that when certain members of the commission were present, all phenomena ceased. This substantiates the correctness of Mr. Hazard's position, and there is no one who has had an experience with mediums sufficient to render his opinion of any value, who will not endorse it. The spirits knew what elements they had to deal with. They endeavored to eliminate those that rendered their experiments nugatory, they failed to do this through the ignorance, willfulness or prejudice of the commission, and the experiments failed, so the commission, very wise in its own conceit, decided that all was fraud." Light, in its notice of the report, says what needs saying as much now as in 1887, "We notice with some pleasure, though without any marked expectation of what may result from the pursuance of bad methods of investigation, that the commission proposes to continue its quest with minds as sincerely and honestly open as heretofore to conviction. Since this is so, we presume to offer a few words of advice founded upon large experience. The investigation of these obscure phenomena is beset with difficulty, and any instructions that can be given are derived from a knowledge which is to a great extent empirical. But we know that prolonged and patient experiment with a properly constituted circle is a sine qua non. We know that all does not depend on the medium, but that a circle must be formed and varied from time to time experimentally, until the proper constituent elements are secured. What these elements may be we cannot tell the Seabed Commission. They must discover that for themselves. Let them make a study in the literature of spiritualism of the varied characteristics of mediumship before they proceed to personal experiment. And when they have done this, and perhaps when they have realized how easy it is so to conduct an examination of this nature as to arrive at negative results, they will be in a better position to devote intelligent and patient care to a study which can be profitably conducted in no other way. There is no doubt that the report of the Seabed Commission set back for the time the cause of psychic truth. Yet the real harm fell upon the learned institution which these gentlemen represented. In these days when ectoplasm, the physical basis of psychic phenomena, has been established beyond a shadow of doubt to all who examine the evidence, it is too late to pretend that there is nothing to be examined. There is now hardly a capital which has not its psychic research society a final comment upon the inference of the commission that there was no field for research. If the Seabed Commission had had the effect of Pennsylvania University heading this movement, and living up to the great tradition of Professor Hare, how proud would her final position have been? As Newton associated Cambridge with the law of gravitation, so Pennsylvania might have been linked to a far more important advance of human knowledge. It was left to several European centers of learning to share the honor among them. The remaining collective investigation is of less importance, since it deals only with a particular medium. This was conducted by the Institut General Psychologique in Paris. It consisted of three series of sittings with the famous Eusapia Palladino in the years 1905, 1906, and 1907, the total number of instances being 43. No complete list of the sitters is available, nor was there any proper collective report, the only record being a very imperfect and inconclusive one from the secretary, M. Courtier. The investigators included some very distinguished persons, including Charles Richet, Monsieur and Madame Curie, Messrs. Bergson, Perrin, Professor D'Arsenal of the Collège de France, who was president of the society, Count de Gramont, Professor Charpentier, and Principal Debine of the Sorbonne. The actual result could not have been disastrous to the medium, since Professor Richet has recorded his endorsement of the reality of her psychic powers, but the strange superficial tricks of Eusapia are recorded in the subsequent account of her career, and we can well imagine the disconcerting effect which they would have upon those to whom such things were new. There is included in the report a sort of conversation among the sitters in which they talk the matter over, most of them being in a very nebulous and non-committal frame of mind. It cannot be claimed that any new light was shed upon the medium, or any new argument provided either for the skeptic or for the believer. Dr. Jelly, however, who has probably gone as deeply as anyone else into psychic science, claims that his experiences, he does not say the report, constitute a valuable contribution to the subject. He bases this upon the fact that the results chronicled do often strikingly confirm those obtained in his own institute, working with Klusky, Guzik, and other mediums. The differences, he says, are in details and never in essentials. The control of the hands was the same in either case, both the hands being always held. This was easier in the case of the later mediums, especially with Klusky in trance, while Eusapia was usually a very restless individual. There seems to be a halfway condition which was characteristic of Eusapia, and which has been observed by the author in the case of Frau Silbert, Evan Powell, and other mediums, where the person seems normal, and yet is peculiarly susceptible to suggestion or other mental impressions. A suspicion of fraud may very easily be aroused in this condition, for the general desire on the part of the audience that something should occur reacts with great force upon the unreasoning mind of the medium. An amateur who had some psychic power has assured the author that it needs considerable inhibition to keep such impulses in check and to await the real power from outside. In this report we read, the two hands, feet, and knees of Eusapia being controlled, the table is raised suddenly, all 4 feet leaving the ground. Eusapia closes her fists and holds them towards the table, which is then completely raised from the floor 5 times in succession, 5 raps being also given. It is again completely raised whilst each of you Zapier's hands is on the head of a sitter. It is raised to a height of 1 foot from the floor and suspended in the air for 7 seconds, while you Zapier kept her hand on the table, and a lighted candle was placed under the table, and so on, with even more conclusive tests with table and other phenomena. The timidity of the report was satirized by the great French spiritualist, Gabriel Delanne. He says, "The reporter keeps saying it seems and it appears, like a man who is not sure of what he is relating." Those who held 43 seances, with good eyes and apparatus for verification, ought to have a settled opinion or, at least, to be able to say, if they regard a certain phenomenon as fraudulent, that at a given stance they had seen the medium in the act of tricking. But there is nothing of the sort. The reader is left in uncertainty. A vague suspicion hovers over everything, though not supported on any serious grounds. Commenting on this, Light says, Delanne shows by extracts from the report itself that some of the experiments succeeded even when the fullest test precautions were taken, such as using lamp, black to discover whether you Zapier really touched the objects moved. Yet the report deliberately discounts these direct and positive observations by instancing cases occurring at other times and places in which you Zapier was said or believed to have unduly influenced the phenomena. The Courtier report will prove more and more plainly to be what we have already called it, a monument of ineptitude, and the reality of you Zapier's phenomena cannot be seriously called in question by the meaningless phrases with which it is liberally garnished. What may be called a collective investigation of a medium, Mrs. Grandin, the wife of a doctor in Boston, was undertaken in the years 1923 to 1925 by a committee chosen by the Scientific American and afterwards by a small committee of Harvard men with Dr. Shapley, the astronomer, at their head. The controversy over these inquiries is still raging, and the matter has been referred to in the chapter which deals with great modern mediums. It may briefly be stated that of the Scientific American inquirers, the secretary, Mr. Malcolm Bird, and Dr. Hayard Carrington announced their complete conversion. The others gave no clear decision, which involved the humiliating admission that after numerous sittings under their own conditions and in the presence of constant phenomena, they could not tell whether they were being cheated or not. The defect of the committee was that no experienced spiritualist who was familiar with psychic conditions was upon it. Drive Prince was very deaf, while Dr. McDougall was in a position where his whole academic career would obviously be endangered by the acceptance of an unpopular explanation. The same remark applies to Dr. Shapley's committee, which was all composed of budding scientists. Without imputing conscious mental dishonesty, there is a subconscious drag towards the course of safety. Reading the report of these gentlemen with their signed acquiescence at each sitting with the result, and their final verdict of fraud, one cannot discover any normal way in which they have reached their conclusions. On the other hand, the endorsements of the mediumship by folk who had no personal reasons for extreme caution were frequent and enthusiastic. Dr. Mark Richardson of Boston reported that he had sat more than 300 times, and had no doubt at all about the results. The author has seen numerous photographs of the ectoplasmic flow from Marjorie, and has no hesitation, on comparing it with similar photographs taken in Europe, in saying that it is unquestionably genuine, and that the future will justify the medium as against her unreasonable critics. End of audiobook.